Welcome to this new nutrition business podcast. My name is Julian Mallatin, and I'm going to be talking to you about the wave of failure that's sweeping through the world of plant-based meat substitutes. Some of you who've listened to our podcast before may recall that we made one in September 2022, and it was called The Biggest Failure in Food Industry History. Well, this one is The Biggest Failure in Food Industry History, Part 2. An update on the continuing collapse of the ambitions of the investors in the meat substitute business. Now, in September last year, we mapped out how the meat substitute makers in most countries of the world were heading for a fall. How products had failed to meet consumer expectations, businesses were losing money, and far from meat substitutes being the great disruptive innovation that we were promised, they were clearly en route to be disrupted themselves. Well, 9 months later, it's clear that we were right. Not only are sales of meat substitutes not increasing, but in many countries, such as the US and UK, they're actually falling. And meat substitute makers are not making profits. They're almost all making losses. Let's start by looking at the US market, which is the biggest. And it's the one that's had the most attention. So since about 2016, you may have seen in the media huge claims that meat substitutes are going to replace up to 30% of the meat market. And that's been toned down a little bit recently, with claims coming in a little bit more moderate, 10% of the meat market. Well, shall we check how they're doing in relation to these big claims? Let's start with supermarket sales figures. The actual data collected by the supermarkets about what they sell is data that doesn't lie. It's gathered by a tiny number of companies with names like IRI, and that company has confusingly just changed its name recently. It's now called Circana, and Nielsen and Spins. So if you see any number that talks about the meat substitutes market or any other, and it's not sourced from one of those three sources, then it is not to be trusted, because only the real numbers from the supermarkets are to be trusted. So what's the real picture? Well, it tells a very different story from the big ambitions that were claimed. The US market for plant-based meat substitutes reached a peak of $1.4 billion in sales in 2021. Now, that sounds big, but actually it's only a 1.4% share of the total US meat market. And it's not an amazing creation over a short space of time. It is a doubling of the size of that market since about 2015. But let's not forget, meat substitutes as a business have been around since the 1970s. In fact, one of the biggest brands still is one that was launched in 1984. So having been on the receiving end of possibly one of the biggest marketing campaigns in food industry history and got to $1.4 billion in sales in 2021, what happened next? Well, in 22, sales began to fall. In fact, the market declined by more than 13%. And already in 2023, as of June the 29th, when I'm recording this, the US market is down another 20% compared to 2022. Now, this is actually very unusual, because when you have markets that have lots of investment behind them and they're having a huge push in terms of marketing, you do not get falls of 13% and 20%. In fact, that's unusual in any category. Food businesses tend to be fairly stable. They maybe go up 1% or 2%, maybe down 1% or 2%. Only categories that are doing really badly have such big falls. And you can count those in the whole of food history on the fingers of one hand. So what have Americans been eating instead? Well, they've been eating more chicken. Chicken is the affordable protein that everyone goes to when their budgets are constrained. It has a health halo. We've been told since the 1980s it's the low-fat meat that you should go to. It fits into everyone's recipes. It fits into every food culture. It's a hugely popular meat. Lots of people love the taste of it. So you won't be surprised that if you look at sales of chicken, they actually increased in 2022 by about 15%, and they're up maybe 1 or 2 percentage points in 2023. It's not surprising that they're not continuing to grow. Let's look at beef as well. That's also doing much better than meat substitutes. Beef is an expensive protein, And historically, during times when people's personal budgets are more constrained, as they are at the moment, sales of beef fall. Well, sales of beef have fallen a little bit, but it's limited to just 3 or 4%, no more than that. So that's kind of what you'd expect. And in 2023, if anything, beef has shown signs of coming back up a little bit to where it was. So that's the market. There are some very well-known brands in the US meat substitute market, and possibly the best known is a company called Beyond Meat. And this was a company whose CEO said back in 2012 that the aim of his business was to get people switching away from animal meat. They've had over $1 billion of investment to enable them to do that. And in 2022, they produced sales of about $418 million. Sounds impressive. That's quite a decent market share. But that was actually a 10% fall compared to the previous year. And on that $418 million of sales, did they make a profit? No, of course they didn't. They made a loss of $342 million. That is phenomenal. That means every dollar of product they sell cost them $1.80 to make. It really takes an amazing, unique skill to run a business like that. If I had ever produced results like that when I was running someone else's company, I'd probably have been fired immediately. Heaven knows how these people keep their jobs. So where does this thing come from that a company gets big sales and generates enormous amounts of losses? Well, it's a reflection of the fact that meat substitute business and the investment community have been fooled by ignorant and inappropriate Silicon Valley thinking. So the whole world of tech and the venture capitalists who circulate around that have had the view for the past probably 15 years that what you do is you build your sales, you get market share, and then somehow profit magically follows. Now, this may be true for Amazon and it may be true for Tesla, but the world of food is not like that. Food is highly competitive. Growth is very difficult to achieve, even for successful businesses and brands. Profit margins are wafer thin. To give you an illustration, a company like Adobe, you've probably all used their software, makes 20% profit. Can you imagine? 20%. And in some parts of the world, as much as 30%. Whereas a typical small food company or even medium-sized food company is lucky to make 3 or 4%. Even a global giant like Nestle, with a growing business in Asia, huge diversification into growth categories and interesting successes like Nespresso, is lucky to make 10%. So this idea that they didn't need to worry about profits just looks like the finance bros and the tech bros didn't bother to find out anything about the industry that they were entering. Now, none of these problems for people like Beyond Meat are a surprise. It's not a surprise that most of the companies in meat substitutes are losing money. Now, I'm not being clever after the fact, because we've been telling our customers since 2017 that meat substitutes would be a big niche at best, and then investors would be disappointed. And you can actually hear me saying this in public in 2019, when I was interviewed by a website called Food Navigator, in which I said exactly the same thing. It'll be a big niche and investors will be disappointed. So what's caused the problems? Let's have a quick recap. Number one problem, the products do not perform on taste and texture. Now, just in case anyone forgets, it doesn't matter how sustainable your product is, how beautifully packaged it is, what health messages it has. People eat food because they like taste. They like something to feel good when it's in their mouth. They want to have enjoyment and they want to have pleasure. Yes, they do want the other things like sustainability and they want interesting health benefits. But more than anything else, it has to taste good. And enough people now have tried out the new meat substitutes to discover they don't taste good enough to justify the repeat purchase. Number two problem, long and complicated ingredient lists. Some products out there have 15, 20, 25 ingredients. There are lots of names on there that people aren't familiar with. Now, this is a really interesting decision by the meat substitute people to have such long and complex ingredient lists. It's a technical necessity, because making a product so that the things stick together and seem vaguely like meat is actually technically very difficult, so they didn't really have much choice. But again, it reflects the tech bros and the finance bros' complete ignorance of the consumer market. Because what consumers have been telling food companies for the past 20 years is that they want shorter ingredient lists, and they want ones that seem more natural. This is a trend called clean label. And ingredient companies, food companies, and supermarkets have been dedicated to creating clean label ingredient lists for, yes, 20 years. The meat substitute people decided they didn't need to pay attention to any of that. Problem number three, sustainability. Now, claiming they were more sustainable is one of the strong and noisy selling points that meat substitutes have made. It seems a pity, therefore, to fall down on actually delivering that to the consumers who are concerned about it. For example, when the New York Times interviewed some stock market analysts about which companies were sustainable, they were told by the analysts that they weren't able to get the information about sustainability that they were looking for. And names of the companies who the analysts named were people like Beyond Meat and Impossible. And the analysts who were interviewed went so far as to say that they didn't believe those businesses were any more sustainable than industrial meat producers. Here's another example. In the UK, the biggest grocery retailer is called Tesco. They launched a line of plant-based meat substitutes, and they made claims of sustainability. There was a complaint about their advertising around sustainability, and the advertising regulator asked them to stop their advertising for the product. And why was that? It's because when asked by the regulator, Tesco could not produce evidence that their products were more sustainable. In fact, there wasn't much evidence of any kind. And faced with an absence of evidence, the regulator decided to commission their own research into the sustainability of plant-based meat substitutes. And what they found, what they wrote in their report, was that many plant-based meat alternatives were, quote, potentially more damaging to the environment than meat equivalents. Oh dear. Now, we should also talk about pricing, because it is true that plant-based meat substitutes are more expensive than animal meat. And again, what you hear from journalists and consultants from the big firms and some of the companies themselves is, when we get our price to the same level as meat, then people will inevitably switch across. It's just the high price that's holding us back. Well, there's a little bit of a problem with this. I mentioned just now that meat substitutes have 15, 20, or 25 ingredients. They have to have all these for the things to stick together. And these, some of these ingredients are specialty, you know, they're premium specialty ingredients. And the substitute has to be assembled in a factory using machinery and using lots of energy. Meat, on the other hand, is a relatively simple single ingredient product. So there is a technical challenge to plant-based meat substitutes achieving the same price as animal meat. And that technical challenge is not going to be overcome anytime soon, not in the next 5 years. And I'm willing to hazard maybe not even in the next 10. And there's another interesting revelation in the discussion about price, which is that people say that price parity is what will make them grow. You know, the consultants from all the big firms you've heard from simply revealing their total ignorance of what happens in the supermarket, because in every category in the supermarket, there are premium and super premium products that sell very well. And they sell very well when they deliver what the consumer perceives to be value for that price. And one of the areas where there is premium pricing is in meat. If you look at Walmart, go look at their online website, for example, you will see that things like beef that's organic or grass-fed or has some other sustainability credentials typically sells at a straight 100% premium to regular meat. About 10% of the US meat market is made up of these premium, organic, pasture-raised, grass-fed meats. So for plant protein people to turn around and say, oh, we have to have a low price for our business to work well, it just doesn't stack up. Now, I've referenced Beyond Meat a couple of times. I just want to emphasize it is not the only meat substitute business whose financials aren't looking too healthy. Most of them lose money. And it's not only the US where meat substitute businesses are in trouble. Let's look at the UK market, which is the biggest market in Europe for meat substitutes. It was worth about £607 million. That's about $700 million in 2021. But in 2022, for the first time in that market's 30-year history, sales fell. Sales measured in money were down 6%. Volume, in other words, the units sold, was down 9.3%. The market leader in that market, which is called Quon, who've been there for 30 odd years, is owned by a Filipino multinational called Mondnissan. And Mondnissan have said that in 2023, that fall has continued and the UK market is down by 10.3%. Now, one of the good things about the UK is financial transparency. It's possible to investigate the finances of many brands. So we looked into the financials of 10 of the 20 biggest meat substitute brands in the UK market. These companies between them, we found, had losses in 2022, adding up to about $30 million. But the cumulative losses on their balance sheets added up to $158 million. So that's 10 out of 20 that we're able to find losing money and losing giant amounts. So it was no surprise to us when one company within this group called Meatless Farms went into administration. That's a technical way of saying they went bust and couldn't go on operating. Now, founded in 2017, Meatless Farms never made a profit. In 2021, the last time it filed any accounts, it had cumulative losses of $50 million on its balance sheet. Now, to achieve that, when you've only been in business about 4 years, that takes one heck of a lot of skill. And it's not just brands of meat substitutes that are in trouble. This is increasingly true of some of the smaller and medium-sized suppliers of the ingredients that go into them. A recent example is a company in Canada called Merit Functional Foods. It was set up to create the plant protein ingredients that go into them. It's gone into receivership. In other words, it's no longer trading. That's really bad news for the Canadian taxpayer, who had handed over $95 million in support for the company to exist. Merit had invested in a state-of-the-art factory able to process 100,000 tons of canola and peas to make protein. They had some pretty good customers lined up. One example is Dyar Foods. It's a US company, which is big in dairy alternatives, and they're part of a Japanese group called Otsuka, and Otsuka are normally very successful, or at least they were before they went into meat substitutes. In the 9 months to December 2022, Merit achieved sales of just $5.6 million, on which it made a loss, that's right, a loss of $12.7 million. That was double its losses of the year before. Now, when we were telling our customers back in 2017 that this business was going to be niche, we were accused of being a bit pessimistic. Well, it turns out, when you look at sales figures and the terrible financial performance, this is even worse than even we imagined. We were being way too optimistic. Now, some of you may be thinking, but surely people are reducing their meat consumption. That was the justification for this market being created. And we are always being told by the media that people are reducing their meat consumption. Well, that's not entirely true. And you do have to be very careful about the messages that you hear about consumer beliefs and behaviors. In fact, what you must never do is to believe anything that you read in the media. Now, that sounds like a big, bold statement, doesn't it? But there's a very good reason for it. In the olden days, journalists sat around and they checked facts. They phoned people. They spoke to multiple people and they tried to find things out. Those days have gone. Since Facebook and Google came along, and they're responsible for actually handling most of the advertising revenue of media groups, the media is faced with lots and lots of white space on its websites that it has to fill. And what they do is they employ young journalists on low salaries, and they give them targets, such as posting 5 stories a day, in some organizations as much as 10 stories a day. And those stories have to get clicks, because clicks mean advertising revenue, hence the pressure on the young journalists to post 5 a day. Now, these journalists now do not have time to investigate, to phone, to check, to phone around. They have no time to become experts in a subject. So the consequence is, when a press release comes in, an awful lot of the time, they change maybe a couple of sentences, and on the website it goes. So the mainstream media was a reputable source of information in the past, but since everything became digital, since everything became filling space on website to get clicks, those days are done. So if you're in the food industry and you cite mainstream media sources as a source of insight into what consumers are thinking, Please don't. Do yourself a favor. Now, you may also say, but lots of consumer research says that more people are going to become flexitarian. And you see this, it's from ingredient companies, from the meat substitute makers, from environmental activists. But there's a big problem with a lot of it. First of all, there's no such thing as quality control. Second problem is it does not look at what people are doing. Most consumer research looks instead at what people say they're going to do. A lot of it is quantitative, and that involves people sitting in front of a screen, clicking boxes saying, I would buy a meat substitute if it was cheaper, or whatever the question is. And that's why when we do consumer research, we never say, what would you do or what will you do? We investigate what consumers are doing now and what they have done. And we do both qualitative, where you speak to individuals in depth, and we do quantitative. So we can be a bit more confident in our consumer research. And what we can say is the trend of reducing meat consumption was definitely true. And meat reduction, if you like, was going on from 2012 onwards. In our own five-country survey, which covers Australia, the UK, the United States, Spain, and Brazil, back in 2014, we found that 14% of people were actually reducing their meat consumption. That has increased to 20% by 2018. By 2020, it was up to 23%. But then the rate of growth began to slow. In 2022, it was just 24%. So that's only a very small increase over 2 years before. So yes, people are reducing their meat consumption, but the rate of growth now is very slow. And this isn't a surprise. An important thing to bear in mind is that people's beliefs about food and health are much more fragmented than they were in the past. People have got access to a huge diversity of information from podcasts, from influencers, from their own searches on the internet. And that leads them to have a range of very different views about what constitutes healthy eating. It used to be possible 40 years ago to imagine that if a belief got to 20 or 25% of the population, it would become mass, and then most people would do that. And no, that's no longer true. Most beliefs get to 20, 25, maybe 30% of the population, and then they plateau and they stop growing. And that's because people have got lots of other choices. So 24% of people are reducing their meat consumption. We don't think that's going to increase. That's probably a ceiling. And most of the meat substitute companies and their investors failed to understand that we live in a world of fragmented consumer beliefs, that the surge in consumer activity they saw 10 years ago was not guaranteed to go on growing forever. Now, I don't want you to think that I'm suggesting that people don't want to add more plants to their diet. Yes, they do. But what they mostly want is more vegetables. They want vegetables in a convenient, delicious form. They want those much more than any of them wants something that's pretending to be a piece of meat that doesn't even taste like a piece of meat. And there are lots of brands out there that are delivering a percentage of vegetables inside their product. And you see this a lot with bakery. In Finland, for example, there's a big bread company called Fatsa, and they sell bread that is 30% vegetables. And here's an example from the Netherlands. It's a company called Lazy Vegan. They sell frozen ready meals, which are ideal for people who get home after a long day at work and want something quick and convenient. And each 400-gram meal contains 200 grams of actual vegetables. And let me read out the ingredient list of one of these. Tomato, cauliflower, potatoes, chickpeas, spinach, onion, carrots, coconut, coriander, ginger, turmeric, cumin, and I could go on. They're basically delivering what a lot of people want, which is some more plants in the form of vegetables that are natural, real, and they can understand. That's what people want, not meat substitutes, not the list of things that they don't understand, not something that's pretending to be meat, but will never taste like it. So what's going to happen for meat substitutes? Well, for the foreseeable future, the next 12 months, there's no reason to imagine this disaster is going to reverse. In fact, the whole category needs to go back and rethink its recipes and rethink how it markets itself. So we think it's going to sort of linger around as it is for maybe the next 5 years. It's not going to disappear. Nothing disappears. There's a niche for everything. And assuming companies reinvent their products and assuming that they actually get the taste better, then maybe it'll resume growth after that. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Thank you for listening to the end. If you would like to know more, please go to our website, www.new-nutrition.com. You can find me holding forth all the time on Twitter and on LinkedIn under my name. And if you haven't done so already, we strongly suggest you go to our website and you take out a subscription to our monthly publication. And that will keep you informed about developments in the world of food and health, not just plant-based meat substitutes. We do lots of other things. And it will provide you with more explanation and insight into how things really work and why they work than you will get from any other source. I hope you all have a great day. Thanks for listening. Bye.